Welcome to Wayward Bodies, a show about our bodies and the messy places that they meet the world. I'm your host, Ellie Bauer-Johnston. Each episode, we'll be exploring embodiment, body liberation, creativity, healing, and how we can start to show up as our whole selves. Today, I am talking with Rose Noir about the power of clothing. Rose creates costumes and clothing for humans of all shapes and sizes. Her background is in designing scenery and costumes for theatre. She currently experiments with latex and faux leather with her brand Rose Noir Designs, working out of her studio in London. At the root of all of her work is the desire to move towards a sex-positive, body-positive, colourful world, where everyone feels safe and confident enough to be themselves. This conversation was such a delight. You'll hear me giggling all the way through. We got to chat about clothing and self-expression, how we can make space in our wardrobes to embody all the different pieces of us, as well as reclaiming agency around what's sexy and the ways that the fashion industry really screws us up, including the cruelty of standard sizing. A few little housekeeping points before we get into the conversation. The first is that throughout our chat, there are a few little internet hiccups, which you might hear in the audio. So thank you for your sonic patience in advance. And the second is a very small content note. Rose works in latex, and throughout our chat, we acknowledge that the fetish scene exists. There's nothing explicit, but if you're listening around folks who might clutch their pearls at that, then maybe grab some headphones. Okay, let's get into it. Hi, Rose. It is so, so lovely to have you here. Thank you for being one of my first guests.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm sorry that the listeners can't see us, but we're both wearing splendid shirts for the occasion, which is actually quite fitting because Rose is, I mean, do you call yourself a fashion designer? You work in clothing?
I say that I'm a set and costume designer and I am a clothing designer and maker, but you could call me a fashion designer. I wouldn't call myself that because that sounds too fancy.
It's a loaded term. It's got a lot of baggage that comes with it. And you also do this amazing service where you help people find clothes, which is an absolute joy. And so, I mean, we're here and maybe it is not necessarily obvious why someone who works with clothing and creates clothing would be on an embodiment podcast. But from my perspective, as an ex-fashion designer as well, clothing is such a huge part of self-expression and it's how we adorn our bodies. So clothing and embodiment really weave together for me. Did you have any thoughts on how we express ourselves with our clothes? Just a small topic to start with.
Yeah, completely. I see clothes and self-expression as really, really linked. And I also see clothes as a big part of self-care. And because it really has a big impact on how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about our bodies, and what we're communicating to the outside world. So in my work as a costume designer, that is specifically trying to communicate elements and aspects about the character to the audience through the clothes. And that's something that we're all doing every day. So in the simplest form, we are communicating, this is something that I like, this is my taste, this is what I'm interested in. But what people read into clothes is actually this huge amount of information that we try and capture from each other. So I think it plays a really big part in expressing ourselves and how we feel as we go about our day.
I mean, from my own personal experience, and I imagine, a lot of people in the last 18 months have spent a lot of time in maybe not my best clothes. Like they've been very serviceable and they're comfortable and, you know, like they've done what they need to do. But I've really noticed the impact of what happens when I put on something that is not a pair of leggings and a comfortable top. What a massive difference it has, just like on the way I kind of embody, like hold my body and move through the world.
Yep.
And I'm not sure I have a question to follow that. It's like, how does that come through in your work? Like, I know that there are multiple different facets, but like with your work with latex and with your work with like helping people find clothing that helps them kind of create that expression of self.
Yeah. So I think clothes are actually serving a lot of different functions for us. So there's like comfort and how it physically makes us feel wearing those clothes. There's the kind of practicality of, in our society, it is normal to be clothed as you go about your life. So there's a certain element of like, it just needs to be functional. Or if you're doing, you know, certain types of movement, you need to be able to do those movements in those garments. So it, you know, so there's practicality and functionality, how it feels. And then there's this other aspect, which I think is the bit that people kind of, the people that I've worked with have kind of, I don't want to say like let go of, but deprioritized. They've kind of gone, well, it's ticking these other boxes of it's comfortable and I can get what I need done and it's passable, it's doable, this is enough, when in actuality they're not doing the kind of fun, expressive, joyous part of it. They're just doing the clothing, this is functional, rather than caring very much about the aesthetic. So I think our clothes are actually serving a lot of purposes to us, and it's about which things we're focusing on. Because I am more of the person of, I want it to be aesthetically pleasing, and if I'm a bit hot or can't do as many things, like I've worn some dresses where I like couldn't lift my arms and I'm like, this is fine, I look fabulous. And I know that not everyone is like that, and I'm definitely not like that all the time. I'm very like, if I'm in my studio and I'm being practical and making, like I am mostly just in a t-shirt because that allows me the range of movement. I don't have to worry about, you know, it getting dirty from the things that the materials that I'm working with. So it just depends what function you are searching for in your clothing. And I think people that aren't paying attention to the aesthetic and joyous part are really missing out on something.
I really agree.
So in history, clothing has always influenced how we've moved, and how we, you know, the relationship between clothes and the body, there's always been an influence. So if you think about like corsets or, you know, the heels on shoes, and those were things worn by people of all genders. So it doesn't really, like the clothes and the shape of clothes has always influenced the movement and our relationship with our bodies, you know, our long flowy things. So it's, I don't think that's something that's lost nowadays. I think it's just something that we're not paying as much attention to because the clothes have become more practical and more functional. We're paying less attention to it, but it's still there.
Yeah, so we're not like wearing whalebone stays anymore, which I personally am relatively pleased for on a day-to-day basis. Like, you know, maybe once in a while I'd be down with a whalebone stay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think...
Yeah.
It's really interesting because I think there's also a piece in that that sort of deprioritization of the aesthetic in the way that the aesthetic is sold as feminine and as like, you know, a concern of flighty, frivolous ladies, thanks to, you know, the patriarchy. And what how it robs us of like creativity and expression of self and an adornment of our bodies. It's such a frustrating thing to just be like to have, you know, such joyful means to express yourself squished down into like, well, that's just for silliness, isn't it? I think that fashion gets a lot of bad rap for that. And there's plenty of stuff that fashion should get a bad rap for, but I don't think self-expression is the one.
Well, there's definitely a lot of things that fashion should be getting the fashion industry should be getting a bad rap for, but that people seem to be brushing over. But it's just so interesting to me, because I find it, even when I go to talk about clothes and I'm like, oh, I design and make clothes, and it does feel like it's not as serious a thing. And I think it is because the patriarchy has said that this is something feminine, this is something that doesn't matter. And maybe that's why things have moved towards, moved in a certain direction aesthetically, is because people are trying to fit more into what patriarchal society is wanting. But at the same time, I think when anything moves in one direction, there's always a group of people that are going to be moving in the other direction. And I have found a lot of the male identifying people that I speak to and work with are really frustrated that men's fashion isn't as exciting as they find women's fashion. And I'm really trying to encourage people to, if they're buying ready-to-wear clothes, that the categories that the companies are providing them in as male and female don't necessarily have to be the rules, that the how things are being presented to us is not how we have to use them, that these are just items, and once they're in our possession, we can do whatever we want with them.
I love that. I mean, like, men's fashion does seem to be very much in the detail of, how much cuff are you seeing beyond the sleeve of the jacket, and like, there are people who really love that, and also how nice to be able to start to expand into something that is a bit more spacious for people of all genders. I may be presuming, but kind of guess that you work a lot with alternative communities, like queer communities, like, the fetish community,
yes,
like the people who are moving in a different direction when it comes to like what is allowed to be worn.
Those are my people.
Yeah, right. How does it impact like how you design, or like does it just affect the way that you hold space for people to explore clothing, perhaps?
So I think in terms of how I design, I have really come around to the idea that I'm allowed to design what I want, and that people will seek me out for my designs, which really isn't what I was expecting. Because from coming from the theater background, it has been my aesthetic and what I like, but it was always very much about the appropriateness for the show and the production and the style of that production. So I think moving into latex design and other bespoke clothing, it was really fascinating to me that people were like, no, you're the designer. What do you think is best? And I can just make pieces that I like and try to find the audience for those pieces, which is not something that I ever expected. And it's like this wonderful gift. And I think as well, in coming into the latex world specifically, I really didn't like most of what was available. So it was really like, I want to do something different than what's available, because I don't find what's available attractive. If this is a material that I'm going to wear, I don't want to wear any of the things that are currently on offer. So I'm going to create this other version of like, I want to be colorful. I want it to be not quite so fitted. I want it to be not as hot. I want to go this different direction with this material because I think it has a lot of versatility and things to do. So I think, I think being a designer is eventually about finding your own voice and doing your own thing rather than just kind of doing what people expect you to do. In holding space for people, I mean, the theater did prepare me very much for the unusual and the unconventional and the unexpected, because in a show, we'd literally be talking about, and then the pigs fly across the sky, and you'd be like, yeah, that bit. No, but after that, or, when somebody's died and all these kinds of things. So the theater was this strange and wonderful world. So when people were like, I want to be a pony, can you make me a pony? I was like, sure, that's fine. Or a puppy or a baby or like, any of these things. It's just like, okay, that's fine. Like, I don't have any judgments about that. So I think some of the holding space has just been about my ethos about people, of I want people to be whoever it is they want to be. If they're not hurting anybody else, then I think that's amazing. And they can, you know, be as colorful and as crazy as and as out of the box as possible. And that those are the projects that I really love, supporting people to really express and be themselves is incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, I can imagine. It sounds like, even just as you talk about it, it's like sounds like such joy. I love that your clothes and clothing in general, and you know, in relation to what you just said, like the way that you create clothing gives these different facets for our expression, because it's not as though, you know, someone wants to dress up as a pony and that's all that they are. It's it's having different outfits for the different pieces of us, and letting us, like, you know, letting ourselves have that space to, with, you know, hopefully with as much, like, you know, as little shame as possible to inhabit that.
Completely. Yeah, I that's something I believe really strongly in, because I think we have, it's not necessarily like different personalities, but different personas. On different days, we want to express different things of ourselves. And I think this was really clearly expressed to me by seeing and being a part of the fetish scene, is this is something that people like and they enjoy, and this is part of them, but it's not all of them. And it's not something like, some people want to express that part of themselves all the time, but not everybody. Some people, you know, once a month, once a week, however often they want is fine. And then there will be different varieties. I think even in the fetish scene, it's, you know, you're still playing, or it's, you know, I'm going to play, we're going to play together, or we're doing a scene together. And it's interesting to me that it's the same language as the theater, and it's, you know, or maybe as of childhood, of this experimenting and allowing ourselves to try on different hats and to be different versions of ourselves. Because, you know, in the same way that we are all masculine and feminine, we all have different ways, in the same way that we'd wake up happy one day or we'd wake up sad. Like, we just have different parts of ourselves, and to force ourselves to just be one thing feels cruel and just inaccurate.
Yeah, it's like a stranglehold on yourself.
Exactly.
And yet so many people, you know, get really attached to an identity. I mean, like, as a member of the queer community, when I was, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, when I was like a baby queer, it was like, well, are you a femme or are you a butch? And like, I know that the community has so much more space now, but there's such a tightness in those like really tightly guarded identities. And it's really, it's hard to like navigate when you know yourself to be this like multitudinous, messy human. And it's not, it's just lovely to have more spaces to explore.
Yeah. And I think with all of that, well, one, we change. So like, we're not static human beings throughout our whole lives. So we change, but then also, like, people want to label things so that they can understand things. And I understand that, but it is restrictive. And I think a way to kind of get around that is go, this is what I am today. So it's not that this is what I am forever. It's just, this is what I'm trying on today. And I think that it's always much better if people are defining it for themselves rather than people, you know, putting the labels on us, because that's just not as helpful. But yeah, people trying to figure us out when we haven't necessarily figured ourselves out, or we're in the process of figuring ourselves out, is not the most helpful thing.
Yeah.
But I think it all comes from a place of like trying to understand and identify. Because even the fetish scene has the thing of, you know, it is really open and inclusive, and then there's still like, oh, but are you a dom or are you a sub?
Right. Yeah.
And you're like, ugh, it's
guys, we were so close.
I know.
I love that idea of the agency of defining yourself. And I think like your clothing and clothing in general, like the thing that I love is that you get to define all of these different things for yourself. So like, you know, there is the wider cultural understanding of like, this clothing is sexy, but like, mm-hmm. actually, what makes you feel sexy? What makes you feel strong? What makes you feel powerful? It might not be, you know, 80s power shoulders and like really high heels. It might be something completely different. And starting to like stretch apart those cultural stories of like, this is this, and you express it through this piece of clothing versus actually what's true for me.
I mean, I'm kind of fine if we tear that apart rather than just stretch it, because I think a lot of it is really limited.
Tiny pieces.
Because people think, oh, you know, lingerie is sexy, or this is sexy, or whatever, you know, and I see sexy and empowerment and powerful and all kind of mixed up together. Mm. And I think that people, it doesn't matter about the garment. To me, it matters about the fit, which is like, you know, I'm big about that. That's, I'm like, if it's made to measure, it will fit you, and whatever it is will look good because it fits you. Mm. So it's like, people have been told, oh, this is what a sexy thing is. And then they've only been shown it in one type of body. And then most people are not that type of body. So they think, oh, I'm not sexy. I can't be sexy because I'm not. I know it's awful. It's just the whole thing makes me so upset, which is why it's nice to be part of the, you know,
the solution to the problem.
Part of rewriting that. Yeah, part of the solution. Yeah. So I think if people feel good about what they're wearing, they will look sexy. Mm. And it doesn't matter what the garment is. It matters how the person wearing that garment feels. Mm-hmm. And if we focus on ourselves and how we feel more, then that will lead us to being happier.
Totally. Like, and you know, for those of you listening at home who are like, I don't know how clothes interact with embodiment work, I'm like, ta-da, here we are. Like, how you feel in your body is hugely impactful on how you move through the world. Yeah, I love that. That's all. I just love that.
Oh, I've got a, I can plug my challenge here. So I've made a challenge, which is going to be free for people to do. And it's to try and introduce them to some of the ideas that I work with about clothes and things to think about when they go shopping, and to figure out what they like. And so like the first exercise is about texture. So paying attention to like the materials that the garments in your closet are that are your favorite, what materials are there, and to experiment with trying to wear a different material and seeing how that feels. Because I think that's one of the easiest ways that we can connect to our clothing and think about our style, like in the gentlest, easiest introduction. So you don't have to start wearing loud prints, and you don't have to start wearing things that are, you know, super tight or sexy. You can just think about how it actually feels on your body, on the weight of it. If you like lightweight things or heavyweight things, if you like soft things or if you like structured things, there's a whole range of stuff that you can explore just within thinking about texture, even before you get onto colors and patterns and other things.
Oh, I love that.
So I've made a little, amazing. I'm really excited that I've made a little challenge
amazing,
thing.
Amazing. Well, we
for
will
people to do.
Put where you can find that in the show notes, and you can go and join that, which I definitely will be, because as much as I love clothes, and also I just want to think about clothes all the time.
I want to think about clothes all the time.
I love that as a like such a sensory experience of your clothing, rather than, you know, the external, the visual, like how does this present to everyone else? It's like, well, what does this feel like for me? How do I inhabit this piece of clothing? And it's so beautiful, and like it's making me do like little shimmy shoulders.
Shimmy shoulders are great. Yeah, that's, I'd say that's moving in the right direction.
I know, I'm like now really conscious of like the texture of this like clothing that I'm wearing. I'm like, ooh, it's quite nice, but maybe it could be different. actually that like was one of the major points that I had on my little notes of things to talk to you about, was like the way that clothing makes us feel, and I know that we've already covered a lot of that. Where am I going? Where do I want to go next with this? There's a piece about like society again, and like dominant society with like angry arms waving. And I know we've kind of touched on it already, but the exploration of standard sizing and, you know, the eye roll, people, the eye roll. And yeah, like, you know, yet another way that we are trying to contain our bodies in things that are not made for us. Yeah, because I know you work only made to measure, right?
Yeah. I've got a big rant ready about standard sizing.
Bring it.
Okay, you ready? Yeah. So standard sizing is for the companies. That makes their lives easier. It does not make the lives of the customer better. It's specifically for them to be able to make more clothes more quickly and generate more profit. I understand that businesses need to make money and that profit, you know, is important. But I think if a company is doing something that is only serving them and not serving the customer, then it's a wrong decision, in my opinion. And I understand that there is a place of made-to-measure things are going to be more expensive than ready-to-wear things. But I think how standard sizing is just annoying and frustrating. And it makes complete sense that people go from shop to shop to shop and they try things on and it doesn't fit them. And what happens is people blame themselves. And I was thinking about this and I was actually like, oh my God, this is exactly like the patriarchy, because it's like, this is the system and the system is flawed, but the system's trick is in convincing us that it's our fault and that we're wrong. So if you don't fit into standard sizing, there is nothing wrong with your body. There, you know, for me, I all the time tell myself that my torso is too short, my legs are too short, my arms are too fat. Like, I have all of these stories that I tell myself because that's the conclusion I draw when I try on standard sized things. But in actuality, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just a human being. I am the size that I am. The problem is that the system is not catering for all bodies. It's catering for very, very few. Mm-hmm. And then the thing that drives me even more crazy is that most people don't even know how the fashion industry works and like fit models and just like, so it's not designed, you know, so there is a standard sizing in, you know, certain ranges will be based off of averages. But even averages, like, that's not necessarily most people. Mm. Like, that's just the average of all of the, you know, selection. So it's not, oh. I could go on for ages, and I don't know if I should, but it's like,
Should, but like, just while we're talking about averages not being real humans, you know, there's that amazing story of, I think it was World War II, basically, like the US Army was like, we are going to gather all of the, you know, data for the men we have enlisted, and we are going to create an airplane that is standard size, you know, for the average man. And it didn't fit because, like, it didn't fit anyone because no one is average. You know, the guy who has average legs has non-average arms. The guy who has average waist has, you know, whatever it is. Like, there is no average, and trying to conform to the convenience of an average measure is such a cruelty that we put upon ourselves. And like, yeah, I fully relate to the story of, like, you know, I don't fit in this piece of clothing, therefore I am wrong. Like, I have spent huge swaths of my life being upper ends of straight sizing, lower ends of plus sizing, and like, walking that line is like, has been such an uncomfortable thing of like, well, I'm too fat to be normal, but I'm also not quite fat enough to fit into plus sizes. It's just like, oh God.
Oh, like, it just drives me crazy.
Yeah. Feel free to continue the rant.
No. So I have a similar thing of, I'm on the petite. I'm a short human, shorter than average, and this is okay. I can get on with that. It is annoying that the clothes don't fit me. But then, like, a lot of shops won't have a petite size. So it's like, so much of the clothing that I buy, I alter. And I guess, you know, even actually the shirt that I'm wearing today, I have altered. Mm. So it's this thing of people don't necessarily know all of the changes that are going into the clothes that I'm wearing when I'm actually wearing them from when I bought them. Mm-hmm. And I have projects upon projects hidden away in my studio that I've yet to get
Me
to. It's endless. But it's the, and I have, my best friend is even tinier than I am. And she can't find things that are small enough. And she finds it really frustrating that the things that fit her are in the children's section. And so it's just this, so it happens anywhere on the spectrum of, you know, people could be any size and be too tall or too short for that size, because standard sizing doesn't usually take into consideration the vertical measurements. They're just doing the like circumference measurements. So it's just, oh, it just drives me crazy because people... I mean, it's also frustrating when I ask people what size they are and they just tell me, like, I'm a medium, because there's no actual, like, it's called standard sizing, but it's not actually standardized between brands or companies. Like, it's just all over the shop. Mm. And I even know that some brands have shifted which sizes and which measurements they count as a certain size as a way to win customers. So what would usually be, say, a size 10 in their sizing, they'll make a size 8. So they've shifted it up a bit so that when people buy it, they go, oh, I fit into a size 8 in this brand. Mm. Oh, I like them. And that like improves people's impression of that brand, because,
oh, the patriarchy. You know,
it's so awful, God. Like trying to make ourselves as small as possible. It's so...
And just like, like the dissonance of like, make ourselves as small as possible, but also you're no smaller than you were when you were wearing a 14 in a different shop. You're exactly the same body. It's just that there's this story of like, well, an 8 is a better number.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, or in the US, it's a size 0, which I think is nuts, because I'm, so you're a size nothing. You're, and then it makes me so upset that these don't actually reflect the size, the actual measurements of the human. Mm. So I get very upset that menswear, their trousers, 32-32, that is a 32-inch waist with a 32-inch inseam. Mm-hmm. That is a logical sizing. To me, if you're going to do anything standard sizing, at least label it with the size. Because then when I go to measure someone and like, I've got 40-inch hips and it's like, ooh, 40. Oh, God. You know, like it's such a bigger number than we're used to hearing, because it's this perception that it needs to be small. Mm. And it's, so I just think it's inaccurate to be labeling it with these arbitrary numbers that then aren't even consistent between shops and brands. So the whole thing,
like, yeah,
is just very,
it's like mess upon mess, and mm-hmm. and each mess takes us further away from like our actual body and like being with it as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any like light notes now that we've like woebegoned all over the state of clothing and the patriarchy?
I've got some. So there are more, like with the internet, it's much easier to find brands that are operating differently. So it's easier to find brands that have a wider variety of sizes, or that are actually paying attention to the fact that bodies are different, or you know, doing pieces that not like one size also pisses me off, but this brand that I really love I don't know if they've gone out of business. They've said they've taken a pause due to the pandemic, but their trousers have multiple buttons on them. So it fits. So each size will fit a wider range of people, but then it's also adjustable if you are a human that fluctuates in size. I think this is great and really practical, because women, certain times of the month, can be different sizes than they were at other times of the month. Or, you know, human beings, we go through seasons. So it's nice that our clothes can reflect that That's about beautiful. Our bodies and not expect our bodies to be the same, because our bodies do change throughout our lives. Mm. And like some of the people that I've worked with, it's just about with the Style Ally, it's just about, you know, acknowledging, yeah, that's okay. It's okay that your body has changed a bit as you've gotten older. Mm. This is just what happens. And that doesn't, like, that especially means there's nothing wrong or bad about that. It just is.
Yeah. Yeah. And
but again, it's the forcing ourselves to be something that we're not. That's just so saddening.
To be, I think, the it's so lovely to have more fluidity, more spaciousness, more mm-hmm. flexibility, rather than expecting ourselves to be one thing mm-hmm. forever, whether that's one style, one size, one mm-hmm. anything, to give ourselves the grace of like evolution, adaptation, like, you know, change. It's such a powerful thing.
Mm. So the rays of hope in this conversation are definitely that the internet makes it accessible to lots of smaller independent brands that are then often much more eco-conscious than the bigger brands. Like all of that, I really love finding new companies mm. and reading about how they're sizing. Some companies even do, that makes me really happy when they do this, they will do a size chart for that garment. Mm. So different garments in their collection will have different size charts. So they'll tell you the actual size of the garment. And then I guess the other ray of hope or advice that I would have is actually measure yourself, have that as your little cheat sheet, and then always looking at the size charts rather than the numbers to know what size to order. And then to not expect a standard size piece to be ready to wear. Mm. I think that is also the other downfall, is that if you're seeing that as like the jumping off point, so it's like, I'm going to buy a pair of trousers that fit me at the waist because that's the most difficult part to fit. And then I'm going to hem them because I'm shorter than average and that's okay. So it's not that I'm wrong. It's not that, you know, that the company needs to be serving every single person, because maybe that's not practical for that company, but to use any of the pieces that you're buying as the starting off point and not expecting it to be completely fitted to you.
Yes.
Because if you want something completely fitted, then you need to get it made to measure.
Yeah. Which is the in between thing, land. And also, like, you know, that can make for an expensive wardrobe.
Yes.
And it makes me think of like Victorian days when, you know, like you'd have one dress a season.
Mm-hmm. They had a lot less clothes. And I think that's the other thing. If we were investing more in our clothes, we would be buying less and all of that would be good for the environment. Yes. You know, that it doesn't have to be that we have a new thing to wear every time we go out and that it's never seen again. And, you know, and that the pieces are made of a good enough quality that they can last. Like, I feel like the fashion industry has just become this, like, I don't know, I want it like this runaway train or this thing that's just gone in this crazy direction. It's not serving the customers. It's not serving the planet. And it just needs to be changed. Mm. So people buying less or switching to smaller brands that are more environmentally friendly, like anything that people can do, I think, you know, bit by bit is a good thing rather than needing to change all at once. Yeah. But it's just... it's kind of gone in, the fashion industry has gone in a direction where it's not actually, it's serving the people who own the companies and no one else.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the way for a lot of industries, is that they got really good at doing business and so they do business, but it's not about who they are serving. And, you know, the same can be said for the wellness industry.
And I guess it just depends about finding companies or brands or humans that aren't operating in that way.
Yeah, I agree. One last thing before we kind of wrap things up. I would love to know about like the wording of your Style Ally offering, because very rarely, I don't think I've ever seen kind of like somebody offering what it is, but also you know, the closest it would be like a stylist or something like that, which feels like such a different energy to what your Style Ally offering is. Do you want to like talk a little bit about how you kind of came about that name?
Yes, definitely. So those were exactly my reservations of, you know, the idea of a stylist to me feels like someone that knows what's really fashionable and what's in and is going to say this is what's going to look great. So there's like an element of that, of saying, I think, you know, being an expert about clothes and knowing what might work for someone in what they want to express. And there's like a bit of personal shopping, but I really wanted it to be about helping whoever the customer is to figure out what their style is. So my job is not to put style upon them or, you know, like, you know, knight them with style or what. No, that it's not this kind of like gifting style to the person, but listening, a lot of listening and asking questions and helping to draw out what their style is and what will be them expressing themselves. And to me, like, I really wanted to use the word ally because I want to be open and accepting to everyone and anyone. And it does not matter to me what gender you are, if you want to wear a dress or if you want to wear a suit. I think people should be empowered to wear whatever it is they want to wear, because these are clothes. They're pieces of fabric. And I don't understand why, when it's a piece of fabric on a roll in, you know, a fabric shop, it has no gender, but then as soon as it's sewn into something, then it, you know, apparently does. I think that's ridiculous.
Magic, like, gendering, like, seams.
It's so strange. And I've even gotten into, like, I'll buy tops and things from the men's section because I'm like, they don't have that print in the women's section, and I really like that print, so I'm gonna buy it. And, like, you know, figure out what needs, you know, fit I need to change about it. Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah, I think the most important thing to me in calling it a style ally was that it wasn't associated with kind of these other services that to me didn't feel right. It didn't feel like, because I think everyone is going to be an expert in themselves, and the way to express yourself is to be yourself. So it's not about somebody coming in and going, this is what you should be wearing. It's me kind of listening and questioning and going, well, if that's what you really love, maybe you'd like this brand, or maybe you'd like these kinds of things, or what about this? And introducing ideas, but it's very much in a suggestion of how does this feel to you and how does this make you feel? And to me, that feels like a, like an equal or a helper or, yeah, an ally.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I love that sort of non-hierarchical support of, like, I have these skills. I want them, but it's not me dictating what is going on.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that I've really learned in doing these sessions is that there are really valid things that are getting in the way of people not wearing what they want to wear. Mm. So, of course, it's very easy to just be like, but if you love prints, wear prints. And then it's like, well, OK, no, let's think about this. Like, when did you stop wearing prints? What was going on in your life? And, you know, there's lots of people that have been made fun of for what they were wearing in childhood, or they're afraid of what people will think or say, and all these sorts of things. So there's all these ways in which we're limiting ourselves. Mm. And it's, I don't think it's as easy as just suggesting, oh, why don't you wear this? I think there's a bit of unpacking and, you know, discussion that needs to happen about that. And that's not necessarily, I mean, it's probably things people could do on their own, but I think it's a much easier process if you're doing it with somebody else.
Yeah, like, you know, support is...
Exactly.
Support is a good thing. And especially, yeah, the emotion of the body from my work, and the emotion of clothing the body and moving out into the world and, you know, everything that kind of comes back at you as you do that. It's a very tender thing. And so I think that everybody should come and work with you, because, like, what a bloody joy that would be. But also, yeah, I think that it's such a beautiful and, like, meaningful service to be offering to people, to, like, hold that space as they kind of unravel why they're not wearing what they want to wear.
Yeah, and just seeing people become more joyous with what they're wearing is so exciting. I'm like, oh, like, people will send me little updates and I'm like, you know, cheering them on, because I'm like, oh, yay, they got that thing and they love it and they're really happy. Like, it's just, it's amazing. Like, I think it's the same way, like, I guess it'd be like, you know, taking care of yourself by eating really good food and that makes you feel better. Or if your goal was to be more flexible and you were working on that and you became more flexible, and just like, I guess it's achieving, seeing people achieving their goals and being themselves rather than what society has told them to be or, you know, put upon them. Yeah. I think that's the best.
I mean, I think that is a glorious place to leave our conversation. Would you like to let everyone know where they can find you, where they can like rush to book the Style Ally offering?
So the easiest way to get a hold of me is Instagram at Rose Noir Designs. My website is at, there's no at on the website. It's just rosenoirdesigns.com. So those are the easiest places to get a hold of me. Yeah.
Amazing.
I think that's it.
She's also got a really delightful newsletter, which you should probably sign up for.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying. I'm just saying, because I signed up for it and I really enjoy it. So you should possibly do that.
Thanks for helping me with my promotion. See, it's all better with support.
Right? Okay. Well, thank you for being here and for spending time with me and for generally just being awesome. And yeah, everyone, this is Rose.
Thank you for having me. And I'm so glad we both wore jazzy shirts.
Seems only right. I'm sorry, but you can't see us shoulder shimmying in concert, but it's very impressive. Thanks again to Rose for joining me for this conversation. You can find all of the links to her work in the show notes. I would love to know your thoughts and feels about all of the topics we covered today. You can drop me a note, or if you like, you could record me a voice note and email it to me at waywardbodies@protonmail.com. If you're into what we do here, then it would mean so much if you would subscribe, rate, and or review. It really helps get the word out and means that the algorithms know to send it to more folks like you so they can find the show too. There are a bunch of ways that you can work with me. Right now, I have a few spots available for one-to-one embodiment coaching starting in the autumn. If you're feeling drawn to reconnecting with your body and feeling more at home in your skin, then I would love to work with you. You can find out what's involved and book in for a free discovery call over on my website, anotherpractice.com. Just head to the embodiment coaching section. And while you're there, you can also sign up for my fortnightly love letter. It's a mix of musings and practices and resources for a more joyful embodied life. And you'll also be the first to hear about specials and new offerings that are coming soon. You can also find me, somewhat sporadically, over on Instagram at Another Practice. That's ANOTHER Practice. All right, I think that's it. Until next time, big love.